Blog Talk Radio.
You're listening to Aramar Tecfio on blogtalkradio.com. The views expressed here are not necessarily those of all hosts, guests, or producers, and the show is for a mature audience.
Good evening and welcome to Speak Your Head. Hi, Chris Howard. Happy to help you this time. Hello, Lisa.
Hey there. How are you doing?
It is white in Illinois, which is good.
it's white all over the state. We've got snow here. We got about 6 inches of snow.
Oh, we have nothing like that where I am. South of me and north of me, they got a lot more. But this is the first time that I've actually seen it this winter where you could probably make a snowball. So, you know, that's nice. I'm not complaining. But you are our investigative reporter, and you have a myriad of interests. Tonight, you're going to talk with us about the NESRA. And this stands for National Economic Security and Recovery Act, which I don't think a lot of people are familiar with. Do you want to just give us an overview of what it's supposed to be?
NESRA was a proposed bill that was introduced by Harvey Bernard. And it was basically to give back the money to the taxpayers that had been illegally confiscated by our government by the illegal corporation, the Federal Reserve. They had taken our taxpayers' money and put them in offshore accounts, which, one, is illegal, but not really a bad idea because you don't have to pay taxes on it. So the original idea was that the money, the interest that was gained from the taxpayers' money in these offshore accounts were supposed to be returned back to the coffers of the United States. And it wasn't. And as we know, this whole fiscal cliff of the tune of $16 trillion that was taken from the taxpayers, it's imaginary. There is no fiscal cliff. The money is there. It just hasn't rightfully been returned to the American taxpayers.
Well, wasn't that sort of strange that because we discourage, well, supposedly, offshore banking, and yet the government was going to be doing that?
Our government put our taxpayers' money in offshore accounts.
Right. So that's what I'm saying. Isn't that sort of a strange thing to do?
Yeah, it's an illegal thing to do, but it's not, it's not really a bad idea because there's interest to be gained without having to pay taxes when you have your money in offshore accounts.
I totally understand that, but, I mean, it is illegal. It's
absolutely
strange. If the government does it, it's okay. But what else did this act have? I mean, how would our world have been changed if people would have paid attention to this act?
Well, people can still pay attention to this act because since the bill has already been introduced and, significantly laid out, the American public can demand that this act be reinforced. It's containing, laws and resolutions, And it's originally based on the reason NESRA came to come into being is through the Farmers Claim Action, class action lawsuit back in the 1970s. But it goes back all the way back to the 14th Amendment. But there was a class action lawsuit when the government had illegally loaned money with kind of fine print stipulations in there, where they had decided that after farmers, ranchers, and Native Americans had been paying on these loans and these fraudulent mortgages, like the ones that we see today, it's still going on. They took all the monies that were put into the mortgages, to the monthly payments, and they also took their land away from them. And it all started with a ranch farmer in Colorado who had gifted his son at his, you know, in his will to General Roy Schwarzenegger. And he was a military general. And the bankers showed up at his ranch and said that, you know, that there was a clause saying that if in the event of the death of his father, who originally purchased the ranch, that if in the event of his death, that the banks could seize the property. And so he went on a crusade that lasted years and was also, you know, introduced to the Supreme Court, who had ruled that the government and the banks and the farm credit had illegally confiscated people's land and money. And that's actually how NESRA came into being, was because of that class action lawsuit.
Okay. So possibly if he wouldn't have been a military person in good standing with the government, it may not have gone very far, actually. I mean, that's
right.
You know, that we will never know, but I think we could probably safely assume. You do have a friend who wants to talk.
Oh, good.
Generation Keeper. Do you know who this is?
No, I thought it was going to be Gwen. She might be, Gwen might be calling in later.
Okay, well, Generation, hello, 605.
Hi, this is Gwen.
It is.
Okay. Hey, Gwen. Hi, Gwen.
Hi, Lisa.
Hi.
I tried to call in and on Skype, fail. Oh, I'm sorry.
Well, sometimes Skype and Blog Talk aren't, well, they're not always compatible.
Right. They don't seem too well sometimes.
Right. And I think, now, isn't Gwen your friend who started researching this along with you?
Gwen has, right from the very beginning, been a huge supporter. She did a radio. She has her own radio show, The Morning Brew.
Right, Morning Brew.
We talked there about it, and from there we've done, what, three other radio shows, Gwen, on it?
Yeah. Yep.
You want to give us your info, Gwen?
Well, I think the thing that really people need to understand, and I always stress, you know, I think people in general think because I'm just one person, I can't make a difference, or, excuse me, I'm not, you know, I'm not going to do it because I don't count. But people need to start contacting their congressional representatives in mass and demanding that this be implemented, because what it does is, it wipes out the debt, all of the fraudulent debt. It gets rid of the IRS. It gets rid of the Federal Reserve, so that we go back to our standing as a republic. And it makes those people that have done this stuff to us accountable. And, you know, this idea that somebody else is always going to do it, or I don't want to get involved, or I don't want to be a rabble-rouser, this stuff is too important, and there's too many people in our country suffering on all kinds of levels right now, and this could all be eliminated if people would just collectively stand up and just say, no, we're not taking this anymore. This bill was passed. We want it implemented, and we want it implemented now.
Okay,
you know,
yeah. Is there any kind of formal organization, even templates for people to write from or anything like that that you know of?
Yes, absolutely. Like I said, the bill has already been introduced. It's on the Lisa Leaks website. And the address to the Supreme Court and to Congress is also listed there. And all it really takes, as Gwen mentioned, is for people to write in, call in, you know, send postcards in, and demand that NESRA be enacted. You know, like I mentioned, it originally started with the Organic Farm Act of 1871. It's written in the 14th Constitution. And the damages that were done by the government and the foreign government, NESRA would basically change that course by doing away with the Federal Reserve and also bringing back all of that money that was illegally confiscated from the United States taxpayers, us, back into the coffers. And I've mentioned this a lot of times. If money doesn't speak to the American people, I don't know what will. This is an opportunity for everyone to just simply write or call in and demand that the Federal Reserve be abolished, and it can be done so by the NESRA Act. All the work has already been done. The farmer claims lawsuit, the class action lawsuit,
right.
Roy Schlossinger, all of this is in place. It's not a myth. It's not a made-up conspiracy. Although there's been a lot of conspiracies attached to it, and that's how its name got changed to the Reformation Act instead of the Recovery Act. And mm-hmm. So there's a lot of disinformation out there to throw people off, to make them think that it's not a real act, and it absolutely is.
Well, isn't there something in that about acting against traitors?
Yes.
Yeah. That's why
they don't
share.
Go to jail. Do not pass go. Just go directly to jail, and you do not get a get-out-of-jail free card either.
And the court, yeah. The Supreme Court already ruled the truth that the IRS, you know, is a Puerto Rican trust, and that the Federal Reserve was unlawful, and that the income tax amendment was only ratified by four states, and so therefore it's not a legal amendment, and the IRS code was not enacted into what they call a positive law, you know, within the code of the federal regulation. So basically, our government officials have acted outside the law.
You know, another thing, too, I think people don't understand that in legalese, there's a much different language that they use. Mm-hmm. And we assume that when they are taxing our wages that we go to work for, that that's income tax. And by definition, income and wages are two entirely different things. And so we're basically paying taxes on our wages and not on our income. The income is like if you took your money from your wages and say you invested it in oil fields or condominiums, and whatever the profit that you would make off of that investment is income. That's what they're supposed to be taxing on, not your wages. But the way that they trick you into doing that voluntarily is by having you sign a W-4 contract when you are hired. And people say, well, if you don't pay, you're going to jail. No, it's not because you don't pay. It's because you breached a contract. So you've unwittingly and fraudulently been tricked into these things all this time, not knowing what you're doing, and private, out-of-country foreign corporations have been the benefactor of that, and it has to stop.
Okay, if, I mean, obviously, if they're not getting so much of our money, they'd have to be stopping this huge overblown military. We wouldn't be murdering people around the world. But then people are going to say, well, where would the money come then for the services that we do enjoy? The fire district protection, police, although they're not really on a lot of people's good list right now. But the benefits that we do enjoy, then how do you think that from the actual income there would be enough money to supply these to the American people?
Not one penny that we pay in tax and income tax provides one service for this country. Every single penny of it goes to the IRS, who is the collection agency for the Federal Reserve Bank. And all of that money that is collected, every penny of it, goes to the interest on the Corporation of the United States debts against that the Federal Reserve has against them. So it's not even paying the principal, it's just paying on the debt. Not one penny of our tax dollars is going for any of that,
so
any of those things.
Where are all of the services being paid for from?
They're being paid from, fire service and police service. All of those are either paid through city, state, or county taxes that are collected.
Okay.
Although I know that, like, the Department of Homeland Security has financial incentives to militarize our police departments, and they give them grants and things like that.
Yeah.
And I think a lot of what they do is they have import tariffs. They have, there are different things that they do to create money as a corporation, but it doesn't have anything to do with the wage tax.
Okay. So you're saying that everything pretty much is state and county, local, all the welfare programs, education, everything?
Yes.
Okay. So then why has it taken this long? I mean, are you two of the only ones who have discovered this? What's
no.
You know?
No. There's a army of people out there. Some of them are Canadians. There's people over in Europe that want to see NESRA being enacted. But the majority of the American people simply are unaware of it. You know, they're not taught about it.
Oh, no, you're never taught anything like that.
And they're thrown off track, honest to God. If you go online and search up NESRA, there is just a plethora of crazy, kooky, cult-like information out there to throw people off track.
Yeah.
President George H.W. Bush issued an executive order on October 23rd, 1991, which provided a provision allowing anyone who has a claim against the federal government to receive payment as long as it's within the rules of the original format. And the original format is still there. It simply needs to take the will and a little bit of effort of the American people to inform themselves of the actual act, the bill, and how it came to be, and demand that it be enforced. I mean, the executive order is there. I mean, I have irrefutable proof. It's absolutely there. There is an executive order, number 12778. It's called the Principles of Ethical Conduct for the Government, Offices, and Employees. But when the case was brought before the Supreme Court, and like I said, they ruled in favor of it, and the Army General title over the United States, United States Incorporated, the legal action, when it was passed to the Senate Finance Committee, there was a Senator Sam Nunn, who was working with Roy Schlossinger, who originally took this on with the help of covert congressional and political pressure that was put on George W. Bush to issue this executive order. And it originated in 1913.
Ah, so, okay, now what was 1871? Oh, that was the 14th Constitution that had, okay.
That's when we became a foreign corporation. The United States did.
Isn't that's just disgusting.
You know, another thing, too, Amy, that I think people don't understand is that this was planned way before, in the early 1900s, prior to the Federal Reserve being enacted in the United States. And but they had planned Edward Mandel House. He had this whole thing all worked out. And they... In 1921, they did the Birth Registration Act. It was called the Maternity Act, but basically what it said was that all children will be registered, and then once the children were registered at birth, they made bonds out of those birth certificates and used them, the United States Corporation used that as collateral to borrow money from the Federal Reserve. So we have been collateral for this bankrupt corporation since 1933. And people aren't aware of this, and they don't realize that when you sign a birth certificate, when you sign a marriage certificate, basically what you're doing is you are pledging your biological property, which is your children. And that's what you're pledging for the United States Corporation to use as collateral to borrow money from the Federal Reserve.
Ooh,
yeah, that's
just nasty. I mean, that's the nicest thing I could say about it. But, Will, what do you think it's going to take to get people up in arms over this? Because so many people are so comfortable. They bitch and moan and complain, but yet they spend, you know, their days working, their nights on the couch, being dumbed down even more. What will it take?
Well, I think it's going to take a collective action. You know, the phone calls, the demanding. I mean, we have got to start making our representatives and demanding that they start behaving like that. And if they don't, then we need to start filing Title 18s against them for deprivation of constitutional protections by virtue of them disregarding their oath of office and their ability to represent us, we the people. You know, I don't know how they can resolve their conflict of interest, because we elect them, and basically we think they're representing us, but all they are board members of the corporation, and we aren't paying them, the corporation is. So where is their loyalty? How can they resolve their conflict of interest in where they get their paycheck and who they represent? Because they're two entirely different entities.
Well, that, and then plus, they also must be loyal to their lobbyists. And
oh, absolutely, yeah.
So, you know, they're torn in many ways. It's amazing to me, though, how the Supreme Court has ruled everything that you mentioned earlier, and yet no action was taken. You know, so, and I'm not necessarily a big fan of the Supreme Court, but if they say, okay, this is wrong, this is wrong, this is wrong, and nothing was done about it, doesn't that show that they're pretty impotent?
Yes, a lot of those files have been sealed, so we the people don't have access to them. All we have access to is that, according to the Federal Reserve Act of 1913, all present and succeeding debts against the U.S. Treasury must be assumed by the Federal Reserve, and that money is to be collected for damages against the United States citizens. But a lot of those documents have been sealed, but they are there, have been written into an executive order.
Right. Well, yeah, the Federal Reserve is not federal, and as I understand it, it's not owned by Americans either.
No, it's a foreign corporation.
I mean, there may be a few, yeah. But, yes, it turns 100 this December. Their contract is up or something. I mean, I'm not sure. Of course, if we don't do anything, they're just going to go on being what they are. But I think it was supposed to be like one of those 100-year deals. Am I wrong?
The Federal Reserve already expired. It's already expired, but people just aren't aware of it.
Expired this December? Was it a 99? Did it just expire this December?
I understand that it expired some years ago, but I recently came across on the United States government pages that it did expire December 31st of 2012.
That it's already because the 21st is when it will be 100 years old. It's coming. I believe it's the 21st. But okay, so it's expired either way, either recently or a few years ago maybe. And so we didn't hear anything about that because it's just going on conducting business as normal.
Well, what worries me about the fact that it's expired, what worries me about that is that if it has expired and the money's already been confiscated, as we know, in offshore accounts, and if it's expired, how are we going to get it? Do you have some thoughts about that, Gwen?
Well, I do, and it goes back again to 1933 when they when the United States went bankrupt, the corporation, the Federal Reserve now holds them in receivership, thus the IRS becoming their collection agency. But at the same time, there was a bill that was signed June 5th of 1933, House Joint Resolution 192, that says, I mean, they couldn't take our constitutional money without providing remedy. And we can't pay a debt with a debt note, which is what a Federal Reserve note is. It's not money. And so this whole idea of our slavery is completely based on an illusion and a lie that we've been fed to believe that this is money when in fact it's a debt note. So House Joint Resolution 192 says that they have to pay the debt dollar for dollar. And that is our remedy because we cannot, I mean, and if people understood this, they use the Federal Reserve notes. They go to work, and they get Federal Reserve notes, or they get a check, and they take it to the bank, and they're given debt instruments. So that makes them a debtor. It doesn't make them, they're not in control. They've become the debtor. And so what ends up happening is every time you spend a Federal Reserve note, you are increasing the national debt. because the debt is never being discharged and the books never get balanced. And they don't tell you this. They don't tell you that you can discharge the debt. They don't tell you that when you sign a check to pay your bills at the bank, if I sign a check on the line where I sign my check, at the end of that line, and everybody can get your checkbooks out and look at your checks, the line that you put your signature on has a little MP at the end of that line. That stands for micro print. And if you get a magnifying glass out and you look at that line, it is not a solid line. It says something to the effect authorized signature or authorized signature. You're the person authorized for the corporation of your name in all capital letters for them to release the money. That's how the money gets generated. Well, then, because it is on watermarked paper with a border, they resell it as a bond 9 times. So if you write a check for $100, they will take that same check and they will sell it 9 times and make $900. So that's what the fractional banking is doing, and this is why it's such a Ponzi scheme. Your birth certificate, your Social Security card, your title to your car, your driver's license, every single one of those documents is on watermark paper with a border, and it's being used for them to generate money. That's, Amy, how they create their money to run the country.
Okay, and marriage licenses also, like you mentioned, that would be anything. Okay.
So what happened then? In that same time frame, they wrote the Trading with the Enemies Act. Well, now the United States is a foreign corporation. It's held in receivership by the Federal Reserve Bank, which is also a foreign corporation, and they so now they make the American people the enemy. The Trading with the Enemies Act was a bill targeting the American people. And I'm here to tell you it's only gone swiftly downhill from there. But it's because people aren't aware. And when they're teaching government and history and all of those things, nobody's telling us that your city, your county, your country, your state, that they're all corporations. Your state troopers are a corporation. Your judges are a corporation. Nobody tells you that. So we can't damn the people for what they don't know. We have to educate them to let them know what the situation is, and hopefully that will get them good and pissed off enough so that they'll get up and finally stand up and say, I am an American national, I refuse to be your slave, and I refuse for you to do, I do not consent for you to do this to me, and I want NACERA implemented, I want the criminals in jail, and I want my freedom.
There's another thing we can do. We can all, if we all unilaterally decide to stop paying our taxes, that would cripple the government. And like you say, it is a foreign entity. If everyone just stopped paying their taxes, then some notice would be taken. When Roy Schlesinger went before the Senate committee to present the evidence of the banks and the government's criminal activity, he informed them of how the Corporation of the United States was tied to the establishment of the New World Order. The New World Order is not a conspiracy term, it's a real term, which would bring about the fascist one-world government ruled by the international bankers.
Mm-hmm.
That task force was put together consisting of over 300 retired U.S. military officers who strongly supported constitutional law. And this task force, which has already been assembled, was responsible for the investigation of the government officials, congressional officers, judges, and the Federal Reserve, as Gwen mentioned, the foreign corporations.
All right. I want to mention, we're talking with Lisa. Leaks.com. Also, you can find her at worldtruth.org/blog. And Gwen from Morning Brew. Gwen, how do we find you?
I air Monday through Friday at noon Eastern time on the Orion Talk Radio Network.
Orion Talk Radio. Okay. All right. Thank you. I'm glad you're in here. Lisa had said that you may come. So glad that you are. I wanted to just mention, we'll get that maybe near the end. Okay. So how did the IRS become a Puerto Rican trust?
It's offshore. So right. they were able to.
Because we rule Puerto Rico. Sort
yes,
of?
We do. Yeah. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and the Federal Reserve was used to giving orders, you know, to the politicians and the intention of this audit, and so they moved it over there. They couldn't be audited. They couldn't be audited.
No, well, makes sense.
To the tune of $800 trillion of our taxpayers' money.
Yeah. Well, what would happen if, you know, Puerto Rico wants their independence? Will that happen? Or if that happened,
that'll never happen.
They voted. They want to become part of the United States.
Well, I know that, a lot of them still don't. I mean, it's going to keep coming up. But
That's why a lot of states want to secede right now. It's not just states that want to secede. I don't know, I think there's about 12 states now that are actively pursuing secession.
Yeah, okay, I knew there were about 10, so 12, sure, I can believe that. Yeah.
You know, the problem is back in 2008, there were, I believe, 36 states that sent the Obama administration and their congressional representatives from their state and the attorney general all a letter stating that if the Obama administration continued to violate the Constitution, that these states would exercise the full extent of the 10th Amendment. And I haven't seen one of them, and I mean what he had done by March 2008 compared to what he has done up to this point in time, and there has been no move that I can see that I would even call legitimate on the part of any state to secede, simply because the only state in this country that has the ability to do that is North Dakota, because they have a state bank, they mm-hmm. have a National Guard, they have resources to back their financial, their whatever they determine to use for currency, and they've got natural resources that they can trade, plus have tourism. So they are the only state that is prepared legitimately to do that. And I've been harping on the state bank thing. Well, of course, the lobbyists come in and they shoot that stuff down as soon as it hits the legislative floor. And I don't care what state you're in, but you've got to have a means of a flow of currency for your state, which means you have to have a state bank, or you still have to be a corporation and a foreign corporation so that you can interact with
the Federal Reserve Bank to handle your currency. So that's kind of the catch 22. I mean, I think it's all well and good that they're going, oh, yay, hooray, we're going to secede. But in reality, they don't have the groundwork laid to do that.
Well, yeah, pragmatically, I mean, that's what I was thinking about. Some of these states that really, I'm not going to say they don't have natural resources, but they don't have a lot. And if they were to secede, I mean, what would they do? So I knew. I lived in North Dakota for several months years ago, and I really liked it. Now I understand. I mean, more maybe just the fact that the people are creative and... Yeah, I never thought that they were stupid, because they aren't.
Amy, now they're talking about, because they have a state bank and they fund their own local small businesses, mm-hmm. and this type of thing, they are actually now talking about totally eliminating the land taxes in North Dakota, because they have such a surplus in their general fund that they simply don't need the land tax anymore.
Yeah, wow.
How amazing is that?
Isn't that, that's like, remember how the toll roads were supposed to be like that? After the road was paid for, they were supposed to stop charging, and now they you know, go on and on, and I mean, they keep on, and they say it's for repair, et cetera, et cetera, but they're making tons of money at it.
Yeah, they are.
Same thing in Colorado. They did the exact same thing in Colorado. They had the toll roads in to reimburse for the money that it cost, but the toll roads, even though the roads have been paid for, the toll keeps going up.
Yeah.
But you know what? The state of Colorado, this is the comedy of it all. The state of Colorado does not even own that toll, the road that the toll booth is on. A company from China.
Oh, shit.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, and so they have their if you go through the toll booth and you don't pay, they'll capture your license plate number and they'll send you a ticket.
Yeah.
Well, my friend fought that ticket, saying, you know what, you don't own this. You have no authority over this because it's not yours. So are you telling me that you've been hired? You have a contract with this company to be their collection agency? And the woman at the treasurer's office is like, no. And he said, well, I'll tell you what. You don't own it, so you can't collect it. And if you want my 20 cents or whatever the heck it was, then you get in touch with those Chinamen over there and you tell them to send me a bill, and then I'll pay it. Because I am not paying you to drive on the Chinaman's road.
Wow. Okay.
Yeah.
That's excellent. I'm really glad you did that. That's good. That's true, though. China has won most of the bids for our reconstruction of bridges and roads, and they also own the majority of the mineral rights for tar sands. They basically own us, and this is, since our dollar is worth nothing.
Yeah.
They don't want our dollar. They don't want our paper money. So what our United States government is doing is, just like you mentioned, they're giving them first opportunity to own land and to own the mineral rights and to own the reconstruction of the United States infrastructure, the roads, the bridges, all of that stuff. That's how
and
we're...
The money for those is coming in as a stimulus package. That was stimulus package money that was supposed to stimulate the economy by putting American workers to work. So they're taking American stimulus money and giving it to Chinese corporations to employ the Chinese rather than the Americans rebuild our infrastructure.
Absolutely. Those jobs are going to the Chinese. They are not going to us. People need to be aware of
it. Yeah, and where is the outrage?
People don't know. You're not going to see that.
It's worse than that, Ruthann. Yeah. People are lazy. People are just too damn lazy.
That's what I'm saying. They're on their couch, and they are content more or less, to be dumbed down. They're going to watch quote-unquote reality shows and think that that's real life. And then, like you said earlier, a few people who are aware, but they just think that they themselves can't make a difference, and everybody around them they can't even talk to. So they just think, well, you know, this is the way I feel, but I can't do anything. So they feel very defeated before they really get started.
Exactly. Yeah, that's exactly
well,
what it is.
Well, and, you know, I think the other thing, too, Ruthann, that we are not seeing in this country is we are not seeing people take any fraction of their lives and taking personal responsibility for it. They're
right.
not taking personal responsibility for a source of water, a source of food, alternative heat, alternative right. energy, none of it. And there is this gross mistake in the mentality that we're from the government and we're here to help you, and the government wouldn't do that to us. This is a conspiracy theory. They wouldn't do that. And this is the kind of stuff that I hear over and over and over and over and over again. And the problem with that is it perpetuates their ability to screw us basically without a kiss and mm-hmm. further diminish our quality of life and totally, it's not even a diminishment. It's an absolute. I mean, I look at my children and my grandchildren. It makes me want to cry. The mm-hmm. world that they are going to have to grow up in, with fluoride in their water, genetically modified food, crap
yeah.
dripping out of the sky overhead day after day after day. And then all the while the government is whining that they're broke. Too
yeah.
bad. You know, other corporations, when they're bankrupt, they're bankrupt and they have to go away.
Exactly.
I wish these people, these asshats in Washington, D.C., that foreign corporation, I wish they would just have to roll up the carpet, pack up their stuff, and go wherever it is that they came from. They're bankrupt. Go away. Quit running a bankrupt company off the backs of the people. But they can get away with that because the people take no personal responsibility for one aspect of their life, and they think they have to ask permission for everything that they have and that they do. Oh, can I please have a license so I can drive? Can I please have a license so I can get married? Can I please sign up so I can get my car registered so that I don't own any aspect of my life? It's you know, to me, there's just something so weak and pitiful about that when I look at the history of the American spirit.
Right. Responsibility thing. Yeah, I fight with one of my coaches. Well, you know, this is the way they've been so dumbed down on and on, and you can't really blame them. And it's like, well, yeah, I can, because God, the universe, whoever, gave people a brain, and it's just this whole responsibility thing. I have a lot of problems with people just handing it over and saying, well, the government will take care of me. I don't have to worry. And they watch their rights diminished and their, like you said, quality of life diminished from 20 years ago. And, yeah, I don't have kids, but I would be horrified if I did at what they would be facing.
We're all going to be facing.
If we don't change. Mm.
We're going to be facing disaster real soon. And that's why the gun ban is so popular right now, because I mean it's really brilliantly crafted if you think about it.
Oh yeah,
you know they've got people paranoid, so they're going out to buy guns, and so now that they have these guns, it's going to be illegal for certain types of guns. I think eventually all of them. So when people panic and they get hungry and they get desperate, they're going to do desperate things.
Right.
And this is going to happen. I live in California, and I'm paying just under $5 a gallon for gas. Milk is $6 a gallon.
Oh, Wow.
People are already getting desperate, and people like on HUD are getting disqualified. People that are on, it's kind of like a trial. How much can they get away with? They got away with Aurora shooting. They got away with Sandy Hook as a justification away. And people won't wake up.
I
know. Look at how much they get away with. They get away with murder and theft.
Literally.
And then we're the ones that are going to go to jail for it.
Yeah. No, literally, they're getting away with murder. And, yeah, I've gotten to, there again, as I'm sure you both have, fights with people over that, too. Oh, no, the government had nothing to do. Oh, no, they wouldn't do any. No, no, no. And it's like they don't understand the government.
Well, the problem is that, it's the verbiage that we use. We keep referring to it and acting as if we have a government. We don't have a government. We have a bankrupt corporation, and we haven't had a republic, a constitutional republic, since 1871. And so when we continue calling it a government, it gives us this idea that somehow we've got a safety net. We've got this checks and balance system. We've got, you know, a security blanket of sorts. And when in fact, we don't. We don't have a government. We do not have a sitting republic. What we have is a foreign corporation masquerading as a government. And because we continue to agree to call them a government and behave as though they're a government, they get to keep the charade going. And then I don't see any of them suffering from the charade, but I look around and I see our people in this country, I see them suffering because of the charade.
Right.
So we need to quit even referring to them as a government. They're a corporation. We need to start changing our verbiage and calling things by their real name. And we need to start holding them accountable.
They told me that they said, just look at the word governmental. They govern the mental status of people. It was like, okay, yeah, because they are. We see what they want us to see on, if you watch mainstream media, I don't, but if you do, you get just what they want you to, because there again is owned by a few companies that are, well, they're corporations, multinationals. And this is why we're always encouraging people to check your alternative media, whether it's the radio shows, the newspapers from elsewhere, or underground, you know, quote unquote, news in this country, because you're not going to find out what's happening. And the people we're talking about, though, so many of them, that's it. While they're on the couch watching the TV, all they see is what mainstream media puts out.
Right. It's exactly what they want them to see. And
exactly.
I'll tell you what.
That's what I'm saying. Yes. Yes.
Mainstream media is the best reality show on TV. It really is. Because, I mean, it's just, I watch it. I watch it because I make sure it's like, look at all this propaganda they're putting out. It's just like the reverse of what's really going on. Like Chris Dorner, you know, the guy that they kill, burn him down.
Yeah.
I don't think the guy ever existed, to be quite honest with you, but I mean, they do. They just get away with all this propaganda and now all this hype about the fiscal cliff, and they are going to enact that fiscal cliff, and that is what's going to make people desperate.
Yeah,
and hungry. I'm telling you.
That's it. But you know, there are people who are saying, well, okay, let that happen, because then that will get the American public so angry they'll do something. How do
they'll
you feel about
something
that?
And they'll throw us in the FEMA camps or whatever they call them, redistribution camps.
The re-education camps.
We're back.
You know,
now.
I think, you know, when I look at where we're at and the stage of the game that we're at here, You know, I really have. I've just called the men out on my show because, to me, the men in this country long ago should have stood up and they should have stopped this tyrannical charade, and they did not. I saw them on YouTube with their big guns and all their ammo and their camos and how they're not going to, you know, nobody's coming to take our guns and they're not going to do this and they're not going to do that. And really, well, where are they? While our rights are being usurped day after day after day, to the point that I don't even recognize this country as even America anymore, you know. And got the other men who sit around and drink beer and watch football, and they can't miss a to go do anything,
right?
You know,
but money in their fantasy football league. And the militias, the so-called militias, I call them out too, that okay, we're ready, we're gonna be there when the time is right. Like, when? Well, the time has come and gone. And I'll tell you, Americans, the militias belong to the government. They're already bought and paid for.
That's really, really, really depressing.
Yep.
Yeah.
You know, we're really at a time now where we have to make a choice. We have to make a choice not only for ourselves, but for our children and their children and the children that are coming after them. And do we lack that much common sense and compassion that we don't care? And you know, the supersize me America thing, I think, is probably the most nauseating thing that I see, because we live in these big giant houses and we've got all these cars and we've got RVs and jet skis and snowmobiles and boats and this and that, and you know, we've got all you do then is work to have stuff sitting in your driveway that you never get to enjoy anyway, when you could have taken those dead instruments and you could have donated them to a local church, and where a soup kitchen could have been set up to feed the community.
Sure.
Or at least the less fortunate. Nobody's in service anymore. Nothing is about community anymore. It's all about self, 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 and supersize me, and the more I have. You know what? When you slide into home base for the last time, folks, none of that crap is going with you. Get
we
over yourself.
We take up about 5% of the population of the world, and we use between 25 and 35% of the resources, and that is just wrong and can't go on. So what you're talking about, supersize, it can't go on.
No. It's killing us. It's killing us as a nation. It is totally destroying us. And, you know, all those, you know, supporting those big box stores like Walmart and what's the place where you buy computers and stuff? What's that place called? I don't know, but it's Best Buy.
Best Buy is what you're thinking.
See, places like that, you know, support your local businesses. Go to the farmers markets and eat healthy food, and get yourselves healthy and downsize, and, you know, get rid of all that stuff that you don't need, and start being in community again and having some free time available to enjoy your neighbors and your family and the things that are important. Grow a garden.
Grow a community garden. Help each other out. Do something communal. Get a community garden going. Work with your schools. You know, do everything that you can. I mean, I'll tell you what. We are going to be forced back into nature, and it's about damn time.
I'm still looking for the Eco Village, guys. If anybody knows, I've checked
out.
They're
all over the place. They're all the Eco Village.
I know, but there again, it's just like anything else. You have to have a fit. It has to fit. And I've checked some. I'm going to check some more. But our time is up. LisaLeaks.com and also worldtruth.org/blog will get you to Lisa Elkins Goodman. And Gloria, why am I calling you that, Gwen? Gwen from Morning Brew has been on tonight, and you can find her at Orion Talk Radio, Monday through Friday. So I want to thank both of you.
Thank you for having me. I appreciate it.
Thanks so much.
Thank you, Ruthann.
Okay. Bye-bye. Now on Feed Your Head, welcome to Jonathan Mark. Hello, Jonathan.
Hi, how you doing?
I'm so glad you made it this time.
Yeah. I get there every so often.
Problem before. And Jonathan can be found at www.flybynews.com. And I'm not saying that's the only place, but this is your main site.
That's my main place, and do you want me to give you a little background on why it's called Flyby News and
yes,
where it came from?
Yes, that's a wonderful story. I was just going to say, tell us how you came by this title.
Well, I was working for a clean energy company working on prototypes, and I'm not the tech person, but I did receive a computer pretty early in the early days, around 1995 when we formed this company. And in 1997, Professor Carl Grossman came to UMass to present a lecture about this launching of a space probe called Cassini. It was being launched in 1997 in October, and it had 72.3 pounds of highly radioactive plutonium on board, 238, 239 isotopes, and it kind of concerned people. I mean, a lot of people got upset about the launch, and that was pretty bad because if it landed on a jagged or sharp area, it could have, released the radiation
right.
quite a bit. But what really concerned me was the plan for sending it in the opposite direction than where it was ultimately headed for. They sent it to Venus. And they did two flybys around Venus to accelerate it, and then they came back to Earth going at around 10 miles per second with all that plutonium on board. And now that we know that meteorite and how that exploded, that could have happened to this Cassini space probe if it was a little bit off course and it didn't inadvertently re-enter the atmosphere.
It's very dangerous.
Incredibly, and that was alerted me to that there was some high risk taking, and I wanted to figure out what in the world was this being done for, and then you find out that the reason is even more scarier than that one mission, which was that the military was taking over the civilian space program, and they were planning on putting weapons around the Earth to control outer space, like England controlled the high seas back in the 1800s, and they would put this on their website, and they said that we want to dominate the world for U.S. interests. And then, it dawned on me, holy mackerel, if they were to do this, then it would be the end of the life as we've known it. And I was very concerned. So my first project was to stop weapons from entering outer space. Which was in place by the Anti-Ballistic Missile Treaty of 1972. There was no offensive weapons in outer space. And the thinking was that if you can stop the expansion of the arms race, then there'd be a chance of reversing it and stopping it.
Mm-hmm.
So our first campaign was to stop weapons from entering space, and we failed. Right after 9/11, George Bush gave himself authority to terminate, a treaty that was signed by the President and the Congress in 1972, and just axed it within 6 months after 9/11. And and you know, there was no real justification for why he should be doing that, because supposedly these attacks were accomplished with, you know, very low-tech equipment. And the whole thing about this Star Wars is like on a whole nother level, and it would only proliferate and add to the arms race. So after we lost that campaign, we realized that, well, there's a lot more to the problem, and we focused on, you know, the catalyst of 9/11, and we focused on other aspects that where the military-industrial complex became a real player in our lives, to the point where I believe, you know, they took out a president in 1963 and maintained a cover-up ever since, and really control, well, a lot of people believe in about what we can do, and corrupted the whole political system and everything connected with the military-industrial complex, because they've infiltrated most everything, including academics and education. Mm-hmm.
That's it. Even the academics, and there again, I've had some heated talks with a friend who he just thinks that professors and all are above, totally above any kind of corruption on and on. His mother's a professor, and so he has this. He's coming at it from a different place. But we know, just like with the scientific studies, whatever your labs, if they're funded by a certain drug company, well, you can pretty much be sure of the kind of results you're going to get. So,
exactly, and it's no longer we're basing our civilization based on science and research. We're basing it on corporate interests and mm-hmm. Financial mm-hmm. interests, and that basically buys our projects. So we yes. have a massive problem with pollution entering our atmosphere, and the way they deal with it is continue the pollution and start working on geoengineering projects where they covertly are spraying elements into our atmosphere to deflect the sun and do other harmful ways of treating our atmosphere rather than getting to the root of the problem.
Right.
And so it's only getting worse from everything that they're accomplishing. And it's all from this mindset of ignorance and might. In fact, the year after they killed Kennedy, 1964, a military general exploded a nuclear bomb in the Van Allen belt, about 400 miles from the Earth. For what reason, you know, to mess up with the Soviet satellites, they say, this UPI article, but other people think that, you know, the astronauts really couldn't get through the Van Allen belt, so they were experimenting what would happen, and so we don't really know what happened. We, you know, there's never been a repeat of the Apollo missions, and so I created a film in 2012 that covered, you know, what would happen if I looked at this from a direct point of view and follow the evidence ever since, you know, Kenny was killed and what
and
went on since.
It's amazing, this film of yours. It's you touch on and go in depth on so many different things, and you put it all together.
It's been very rewarding because, you know, I've been working on this website for over 13 years, and I've come across such beautiful, wonderful material, and you know, I've taken a very humble role in this because I feel like I'm an editor and I'm compiling what other people have done. But then I put it in a certain sequence where people could see the relationship of one event to another. So mm-hmm. now I'm going to be remixing that video compilation, and I'll be focusing on two issues which have major anniversaries this year. President Kennedy being killed 50 years ago on November 22nd, and on December 23rd this year, the Federal Reserve is 100 years old, and those two big anniversaries deserve to be together and be highlighted of how they're interconnected.
Yeah, no, I agree. I learned so much from the film, and you several pieces of it I had seen. Like you said, you compiled a lot of different videos and songs, and of course you've got Loki in there, who's one of my favorites, you know. But So you, that was it? You just wanted to put these things that you had been seeing and hearing and saving, you wanted to put them together?
Yeah, I wanted to get the best of the best videos I could find ever and try to create a, because it was already after the 10th anniversary of 9/11, and we have such good, you know, resources regarding 9/11, but it was so much more than about 9/11. And, mm-hmm. and so I picked the four major conspiracies of our last 100, 150 years, I believe, and those conspiracies seem to unfold through listening to President Eisenhower warning about the military-industrial complex on his way out. And then you had Kennedy come into office, and he was making a turn. He wanted to end the Vietnam War. He stopped the nuclear holocaust in that Cuban Missile Crisis. And John Hanke, who did this film called Dark Legacy, George Bush and the Murder of John F. Kennedy, was so inspirational to me because, you know, he spent 40 years on that one topic of JFK and produced a very powerful film that not only shows the perpetrators at that time, but also shows where they came from and the whole connection to the Nazis and Bush Sr.'s father, Prescott Bush, and other elements. And, you know, and I keep rewatching that film because I keep, you know, learning and remembering more about it. But it's a wonderful film that doesn't say that George Bush was the one guy, but he was the one guy, George Bush Sr., that was most connected to all the players that came before and after regarding this New World Order. And so that film, that which is on Netflix, is the a very big inspiration of my film. So when I did the short version, the original was in 2.5 hours. The short version is only 58 minutes. And it starts off with that Hanke JFK issue, which is very timely for, you know, this time that we're in, because it's going to be on everyone's minds, and you're going to get bombarded with false information from the media. So it'd be really good if more and more people do these alternative media independent films around that time of the 50th anniversary and talk about it and write letters to the editor and not let the media and the corporate systems, you know, control reality and our history and that the horrible deed. But the cover-up of that is immense. And
I'd like to ask you about that, about the Kennedy murder, because there a lot of people and groups were after him. He had wanted to print some, you know, U.S. notes, and this would have bothered the Fed, evidently. He took on the steel companies. You know, there were a lot of different people who had a beef against him.
A lot of special interests, especially in the military-industrial complex, which infiltrated through the intelligence agencies, like George Bush of the CIA was announced by J. Edgar Hoover as being charged of the anti-Castro Cubans about 8 days after the assassination. So Bush even has his name in a memorandum from Hoover, though he denies ever being with the CIA until he became the director.
Mm.
And you wonder about, you know, and is this too coincidental with all these elements? But yes, they're, you know, they're very intertwined with every president since Kennedy, that the whole foreign policy has been based on that coup d'etat of that one day in November 22nd, 1963, where we didn't have internet at the time. You know, a lot of us were pretty young, and a lot of us weren't here. And it just seemed to be embedded into our civilization, and we went through the Vietnam War and all these, you know, Iran-Contra and all this foreign policy of Nicaragua and El Salvador and the whole, you know, Chile 1973, September 11th event, which my film covers, which is so important to understand what our country's done to other countries. So once you see what we've done to other countries that were in support of democracy, then you can understand what they're willing to do to their own country and our own country.
That's it. It doesn't come as quite such a surprise when we you know, finally, you know, my phrase, whatever, get our heads out of our ass and really see what's going on, we're horrified. And I have to admit, I mean, I was one of those people, I just couldn't believe that our government knew anything about 9/11. You know, oh, no, no, no. And people kept telling me, you know, wake up, grow up, you know, look around. And when I did start researching and get past my own dread of finding out the truth, I was appalled. And
that's the biggest obstacle is the fear of it being true. And David Ray Griffin mentioned that in my film, as well as the idea of denial.
Mm-hmm. Yes. Yeah.
It's
like denial. Yeah. It's just no. I mean, I know this government's not so great, but it would never, ever have a part of that. And then when you really find out, it's just, okay, you know, you take that deep breath and try not to choke, and your life is never the same.
Right. So since I felt responsible in turning some people on to things that are very uncomfortable, I really searched hard to find something that was positive that could give some power to the people. And I discovered that with Senator Mike Gravel, who came to support the 9/11 Truth Movement with setting up the legal work for state initiatives to engage, you know, voter referendums to have a citizens commission to investigate 9/11. You know, unfortunately, there wasn't enough support for that, even at the 10th anniversary, and that's partly due to the sophisticated nature of plants and infiltration within movements, which is what COINTEL has been doing all along. So the architects and engineers, as smart as they are in understanding physical structure and why 9/11 official story couldn't happen, they weren't thinking too clearly because they were on this four-prong approach for the 10th anniversary that included lobbying Congress to get them to support a new investigation. And Gravel was saying that, no, that's the last thing you want to do. That they only covered up. They're part of the problem. And he was supporting a more of a grassroots direct democracy approach. And because of the lack of unity and the lack of understanding, and partly because of all the disinformation and the, you know, the division, the divide and conquer methods, the 10th anniversary of 9/11 just, you know, was squat. And Gravel went back to his national referendum campaign, and so my film links and has a video on that and explains why if we can get the majority of Americans to simply vote on a website to amend the Constitution, if we get the majority of those that voted in the last presidential election, we can amend the Constitution based on that this is a government of, by, and for the people, and because it's broken to such a degree, we're obligated to fixing it, because it's not a government of the government, it's a government of the people. And so right now, since these crimes are happening, especially since the 63 coup d'etat, the people need to demand a voice. And so we're supporting the National Citizens Initiative for Democracy. And that website's also linked to my website pretty clearly, but it's also ncid.us, National Citizens Initiative for Democracy. even though that's a long shot, based on, you know, that there's so few of us that have awakened at this point and awakened and willing to do something, I'm hoping that maybe this 50th anniversary will be a good time to engage people that haven't been engaged before. And so they'll be hearing news about it. And if we could reach out to those people and say, look, here's your opportunity to see an alternative viewpoint. And because 66% of Americans don't believe in the official story about the Warren Commission report of the lone gunman. We have the majority, and then if we could link that to these other issues, that'd be good. So I'm going to be showing a film by John Hankey on my Main Street Cinema in Greenfield, Massachusetts, that film called Dark Legacy, George Bush and the Murder of John F. Kennedy. And I'm going to be showing a short film that I'm editing right now from the film compilation for a second feature there. But, you know, that's
in November, right?
Yeah, I'm showing it on November 21st, which is a Thursday. November 22nd this year lands on a Friday, which is what happened 50 years ago. It's a Friday before Thanksgiving. So last year, you know, November 22nd landed on Thanksgiving. So it's kind of nice that it's shaped this way. And there's a lot of good opportunities for that whole weekend to have events and just speak loud and clear and try to, you know, awaken our fellow citizens.
Right. Well, you know, they say that if we can awaken between 5 and 10%, that a lot of, well, revolutions, a lot of changes in the world have come about by that percentage of people.
Yeah, and 'cause then you would have enough of a voice to introduce something like a citizens initiative. For either investigating issues, or let's say we want to audit the Fed, you know, we could all join with Ron Paul and yell at the top of our, you know, lungs to audit the Fed and try to get Congress to do it, but they'll never do that. So, but if we can,
the Fed needs to go. In my opinion, I can't see any use for it.
Well, again, it's for the military-industrial complex, and it's
well,
a global.
Well, that's why you'll get used for it, yeah.
Yeah, and you know, they charge us interest for our money, and it was a highway robbery of the whole treasury system that gave the power of our interest in our banking system to these private individuals that we don't even know who they are, and then since that's been created and since 1913. Then these globalists that have this global financial system could invest in wars, and no matter which group wins or loses, the investors would make money from this, you know, war profiteering direction.
Sure. Well, so, war is a very profitable business. It is the most profitable, yeah.
But there wouldn't have been war if there wasn't the Federal Reserve System incorporated, because then, if they were investing in Germany, you know, with their currencies, you know, they would lose it, you know, if they lost. So they supported both sides. Prescott Bush had his funds frozen for financing the Nazis. Most people don't know it, and most people don't know the secret suppressed history in the 1930s when there was another coup d'etat attempt this time, and they went to Smedley Butler, a two-star general, and asked them to lead their militia, military groups that they had aligned with this transfer for a fascist type of government. And they offered, you know, Smedley Butler to be in charge of everything. And he was a patriot, you know, and he said he'd go along with their planning basically to expose it. And he exposed it in front of Congress. And so it was stopped. But even though, you know, these people were exposed for this Nazi coup d'etat of the U.S. government, they weren't punished. They were, you know, they kept going. And they're the ones that recruited the Nazis after World War II and kept going after those wars. So,
well, I never learned that in school either, Jonathan. I mean, you know, I was telling somebody today that I used to love history when I was in school. I just loved history. And then I found out that, 90%, well, at least 75% of what I learned in history was just a crock. And so now I'm relearning everything, or learning it again for the first time. And I don't blame my teachers. Professors, because they believed what they were teaching.
Right, and it's like a willful ignorance as well.
Yeah,
and it's a mind control element. So we're dealing with this zombie state of world where at the same time the world's being destroyed ecologically. Through the same process that's destroying it through loss of freedom and civil liberties and human rights. that same group is, you know, polluting the world enough to affect the climate and to, you know, make a future questionable. So mm-hmm. you wonder, you know, what in the world are they doing? And it's either a big machine that they created that they can't stop, that's just going on its own since it's been created in that method, with the, you know, the ruthless top taking over, but there could be a consciousness behind it that, you know, is based on Satanism or something else, or you know, it's hard to speculate, but it's just very demeaning for us citizens to accept, you know, such a small percentage of our world to do such destruction. And,
yes.
And so I spent a lot of my life to, you know, figure out how I can most effectively, you know, help wake up people. And so that's what the film's about. And it's so rewarding for me to, you know, have people like you that can appreciate it and can see what really is there. And
I think
and,
it's wonderful. That, you played one of my favorite 5 minutes.
Are you there? Hi, Ruthann.
And he, you know, he starts out about a something about, you know, you believe that this man in the cave in Afghanistan did this and this and this and this, and, you know,
yes.
On and on. I mean, the best five minutes of, you know, just straight talk about 9/11. You have so many pieces, so many different things in this, and. One thing I wanted to ask you about, if we could talk a bit about the moon trips.
Sure.
You put it out there. Years ago, I had a couple people telling me that we never made it to the moon.
Mm-hmm.
And I was like, well, what are you talking about? Of course we did. And then you come up with all of this info, even explaining how it was faked. Do you want to talk a little bit about
it? Yeah.
It's amazing.
Well, you know, I think I'm giving it a push because I've been condensing all the information that's out there. Usually there gets to be too much information, so you end up, you know, not hearing anything.
Mm-hmm.
So I've been watching this film called A Funny Thing Happened on the Way to the Moon by Bart Sibrel. Sibrel.com, S-I-B-R-E-L, and he's a wonderful professional filmmaker that produced this film that, you know, I watch, and all, you know, again, all the information you saw in my film is from that film, and it's a 47-minute film, and I watch it, and I was kind of mind blown because it had a clip of NASA that came from NASA showing the lunar astronauts. Faking they were halfway to the moon, but they're really in low orbit, and you know, and you just started wondering about everything. So every year I would make sure I would show it publicly and try to get feedback on this and try to get people to tell me why, you know, this is totally impossible. And I did get some people very angry at me, and I did get yelled at, and you know, and a lot of people don't even want to know about this because, you know, it's so disturbing. Because it shows us all that we've all believed in something that likely is not true, and it's very humbling for everybody. Because, you know, we spend most of our lives believing that, you know, man is, you know, in the United States has landed on the moon, but if somebody's not more skeptical after all this time, you know, that no one has even claimed to have gone through the Van Allen Belt. Then they're not really thinking correctly. They're into the mind control and denial element.
Right. I looked up the Van Allen Belt then to see about, you know, what's he talking about, and because you had talked about the shuttle.
Yeah.
They had a bad experience.
Yeah, only 350 miles from the Earth, and the belts don't start getting fixed till around 1,000. It goes to 25,000 miles. So at 350 miles, they had better deflector gear, and they were in the suits. And the astronauts claimed that they could see radiation going through their skulls because it's penetrating everything. And, you know, people on the space station once in a while see flashes of radiation like that with their eyes closed. But when they got to 350 miles from the Earth, it was very intense, and they didn't even get even near to the hard part. So how could they do that in the 60s? And also, when they went to the moon in 2010 to try to get into the orbit of the moon so they could take pictures, they couldn't figure out how they did it in the 60s in 3 days. It took them 3 months to really maneuver the spacecraft in order to gain lunar orbit, never mind landing and launching off and everything else.
Mm-hmm.
So, so you want to give, some people want to give the government too much credit, you know, that they have all these cities and they're mining on the moon, or, you know, and that's part of all the confusion that, because, you know, why believe in that, you know? It's just ridiculous. They discredit you by, you know, just more and more and more half-truths that are really whole lies. So there's, you know, very few people willing to, you know, take a stand, because you get mistreated if you start questioning things that have been ingrained in us for generations.
Yeah. Well, right. But I think that, I know I'm not the only person that 9/11, once I did get out of denial, that it really woke up. And so I think that more and more people are questioning what we've been told for all of our lives. And, you know, I don't know if quote-unquote America was ever what I thought it was. I don't know.
Well,
you know,
we had ideals, I think. I mean, there's always been a certain level of ideals. There was a nice idea to free ourselves from the monarchy and the financial rule of another continent. But it was always meant to be an evolving direction, because they had these ideals of all men are created equal, and yet there was slavery.
Well, that was it. You know, people say, well, their idea of all men are created equal meant white males.
But that wasn't the ultimate hope of the creators of the they wanted to maintain it for the current day, but they also wanted to evolve towards a more of an ideal, and that was hopefully written clearly in the Constitution, so you wouldn't have a president in the 21st century destroying habeas corpus. So we've gone backwards over 800 years.
Oh, we've gone way back. Yeah.
Yeah, this is the feudal ages of where justice is turned on its head, and there's torture and there's just crimes against humanity, and then they have this type of cover up element that you know, they can stop the justice system from really investigating, and the justice system is corrupt, the legislature is corrupt. You know, so that's why we need another arm of our government. And that's what this purpose of the National Citizens Initiative for Democracy is, to engage the a system so we can then have a public referendum vote in order to enact laws or investigations without government interference.
And pretty much start over.
Well, you know, it'd be nice to start over again, but how do you do that? I mean,
well, that's it. I mean, how?
And you know, people have this romantic idea of once everything falls apart and the economics, but things can just continue to go downhill in that type of chaotic area. So,
well, if nothing is in place, it will, because every time, you know, the whole thing about nature and you know, create sudden, it's filled, and not necessarily with what you want. So
exactly, it's let's just say that we've already pushed the envelope. And the best way is a transformation rather than a revolution. We need to transform what's there. So there's a few methods that could do this. There's, again, that adding another arm to the government is one way. Having a truth commission. So you could, we give offer amnesty for everyone offering the truth for a certain period, and then after that time, if they didn't speak the truth, they could actually be,
charged.
Brought to trial. And it would be worth it for me to offer amnesty because we want all the lies to come out. We want, you know, back to the Kennedy assassination and 9/11 and the lunar issue. And that would be fine for me because that would be like starting over again. Then the people would be so awakened, you know, with this type of transfer that, you know, even if we're giving amnesty, I think the people then would appreciate, you know, getting it back and having a republic again and based on a more of a direct democracy than a corrupt corporate fascism.
Mm-hmm.
We're only a pseudo democracy, and it's no longer, you know, anything. You know, it's all doublespeak. 1984. Scenario. So we're living that, and I figure, you know, that was why we came here. I mean, if we're part of this generation that, you know, was saying we're going to find a new direction, and I was part of the Woodstock movement, and you know, I was politically active against the Vietnam War, and so at one point there was a lot of us, and yet, you know, a lot of us has kind of like got bought out into
mm-hmm.
comfort, you know,
mm-hmm.
in order to. But we need to re-engage, and we need to bring the different generations to, you know, fight for our ideals. Otherwise, you know, we're not worthy of it. And so this year, being November 22nd, 50 years since, it's a perfect time for somebody that might not have done anything to really do something. And I encourage them to go to my website, flybynews.com, and find the resources there. There's tons of resources. You just have to spend the time. And if you need help, there's contact.
Your website is just loaded.
Yeah, and I don't want to be too much, but so I try to focus on different issues. But it's a resource, so it's to go to and go back to. There's topics of health, as well as environment and political interests and human rights.
Yeah, well, I mean, from GMOs to Guantanamo.
And I have an exclusive on a guy that I met during the Cassini flyby that is a scholar and has evidence of very advanced civilizations that left the code through ancient languages. And he was involved with the Mars orbiter and other NASA missions, the Voyager mission, that shows that there was likely space travel over 100,000 years ago. And,
right, like pre-ice age kind, yeah.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And that he's been able to decipher from the ancient texts, let's say the Hellenic Greek and the Semitic language, all these words that would have a conversion system to a number system that would show measurements and what was accomplished back then. And so he was able to decipher this, and he was picked up by the Manhattan Project and was involved with a couple of NASA missions, and he's lectured 5 different departments at the University of New Hampshire. So I like the idea that there's some surprises still in our world.
He's definitely a
big surprise. And after all these years of knowing him, he still stands credible. And I challenge anyone to give me another explanation of how these numbers got placed in the stat box of the Mars of the Encyclopedia Britannica from 67 to 73. There's a triaxial 3 numbers system that shows the exact distances of these moons to Mars, Phobos and Deimos. And no one else can give me an explanation of how they got there in this published account. And Bart did an article on this, and I have a link to it called The Moons of Mars, and people can read that. So he's the only one that gives any explanation of how that information was published at that time.
Yeah. No, there's just every, I mean, you can spend, so much time at your site. It's like, if you start getting on there, you've got to pull yourself away because, you know, life goes on, you've got to do some cooking or whatever, but
yeah.
you've got so much.
What the best part is that I'm getting more hits this month from Ukraine than I'm getting from the United States.
Ah!
Ukraine, U.S., England's pretty big, Netherlands, Romania.
got some friends in Ukraine, yeah.
And it's really nice to feel like you're part of a world community.
Yeah.
And there's people all over the place that connect with you, and then you're, you know, because just, you know, my country is very disappointing.
and
it's good to be with people that realize that and maybe try to do something different. So I don't know if we're going to, you know, if we're going to accomplish much this year or not, but it's my, you know, I made a commitment from 1999 to 2012 to do this flyby news, and now I'm extending it another year for this anniversary. And then I'm looking forward to, you know, leaving the website up there because I keep using it as a resource and updating it occasionally. But then I want to start working on another way of connecting the dots to our experiences when I was 12 years old with JFK, and go through my life from the point of view of an autobiographical tale that understands, you know, what made me wake up to this information. And hopefully by then, you know, there'll be more and more people ready to do something about it.
Okay, well, I remember you saying before that you were, you know, giving the website till 2012, and now you say 2013. But so how are you going to do this biographical recordings? What's that going to be like?
Well, you know, it's going to be basically a book, and I started writing this in 1976 after I lived in a commune for about 5-6 years, and of course I was way ahead of myself, and I didn't have a, you know, word processor then, and so I would type up these manuscripts, read it, realize, you know, I have a long ways to go with my writing and with my experiences, and I put it aside for a little while, and I did 2 poetry books, which I do have my poetry, a lot of my poems posted from my website,
mm-hmm.
But then I just started working on it, and the thoughts when you start revealing your life just seems to, you know, flood through, and you just have to choose the ones that I'll choose those experiences of when things happen, like the day after Martin Luther King was killed. I had an experience in my high school in Brooklyn, New York, and Kennedy assassination. I was with Allen Ginsberg chanting outside George Washington University,
wow.
I believe, during the 70 moratorium, where we had over 100,000 in Washington, D.C., and they put a curfew on the whole city. And, you know, it seems like all these stories, and living in a community, and then working on with Flyby News, it would be kind of interesting for me to connect it from where I am now, but going back and forth with it through the time of my life, because, you know, you feel things more later on than you did at the time. I was just depressed at 12 years old when Kenny was killed, and I remember, you know, having no way, you know, I didn't have a conspiratorial mind. I had, like, this all-American belief of my world, and you know, I felt, like, gifted, and I used to watch World War II movies after school all the time, and so, you know, the transformation from that to starting to be aware of things, and then to go through a whole lifetime and try to combine it with spirituality and the connection with nature and poetry, it'd be very challenging. It's the type of book that might take me a decade to really complete, but I would want to do it, you know, right. So, and I couldn't do all this work if I didn't have nature around me that nurtures me in such a way that gives me the energy to feel like, yes, this, you know, there's a wonderful purpose in this world, and love is a big part of it, because, you know, nature wouldn't be the way it is if, you know, I wouldn't be here. You know, there's so much to be grateful for. So it's just part of the, you know, what I want to do while I'm here at this point, and especially now that I have the resource done. And I just wish it was more utilized and more, you know, affecting more people. But I can understand why it's hard for people. It's even hard for my family to, you know, pay attention to anything that I'm doing.
Ah, But like you said, you will keep the website up, and occasionally you'll come back in and
You don't have too many websites. Been around since 1997, 1998.
Exactly.
So it's a whole historical tour, and I, you know, when I on my Facebook and I'm communicating, I'll know where things are, and I could use my website for my resource. You know, and it's refreshing because I move things around, but if somebody spends time there and checks out the key resources and other things, they would find a wealth of information that could be useful for so much.
Well, I did not read the poetry. What kind of poetry do you write, Jonathan?
The first book that I wrote was called Mitake O'asin, All My Relations in the Lakota Words.
Mm-hmm.
And it's called The Poetic Thoughts and Stories. And I started wanting to write poetry because I wrote a poem called Warrior of the Wind. And that poem kind of like placed me in another lifetime as a Native American, and it just gave me all that sensational feelings of being here and seeing what was going on, like during the time of 1800s with the crazy horses. And I do have a lot of information on Leonard Peltier, who's Lakota now, that's been struggling. But the poetry is it changes quite a bit. You know, it used to rhyme, and now it doesn't rhyme anymore, and it's less often. But basically, it's poetic thoughts and stories from meditations or listening to nature, and just how things want to express through you. And so, those are my favorite poems. Is when it just kind of happens.
Yeah,
but
okay.
You should check it out. It's right under. You'll see Mike Gravel's picture under the National Citizens Initiative for Democracy, and then it says, for additional quotations and poetry, visit Life Rhythms Poetry Blog with Jonathan Mark. And
okay.
That's the under the,
yeah.
And I have this wonderful quote there by Mike Gravel, where he claims, Marcus Cicero over 2,000 years ago defined freedom as participation in power. If you don't participate in power, you are not free. Whoever has the power owns you. If you want to be free, you have to participate in power. And
very good. 2,000 years ago, Cicero. Okay.
And I love doing quotes. So it's not just poetry, but there's all these inspirational quotes there as well. Like that. William Shakespeare, one touch of nature makes the whole world kin.
Mm.
And simple things. There are two ways to live. You can live as if nothing is a miracle. You can live as if everything is a miracle. Albert Einstein.
Right. I was a kid when I figured out, and I can't remember, except those weren't the words, but that was the whole thing. Either everything matters or nothing does, kind of thing, was what I thought. And I've never changed that. And I think it all does. It's all sacred. It all matters.
I think so, and it's because we're here, we're experiencing this, and you can't claim that you could experience it without something more to it than what we even know right now.
Yeah. Oh, I think that we're going to be learning so much more, and I think that kind of learning is coming pretty fast now. People seem to be getting it. They may not be getting politics and things like we would wish, but they seem to be getting to a higher vibratory rate or something.
Well, when you lose things, you get to value it, and
yes.
And that's where we're headed towards. We're going to lose a lot:
yes.
Water, clean air, sunlight. Mm-hmm. You know, we're losing all that stuff. So, so there's like a choice of. In our lives, if we're going to make our decisions based on fear or love, and there's a big difference between those two elements, and fear is just dig a hole and you keep digging and you don't want to get out of it because you're too afraid, you're
right.
Influenced
it's
by fear.
Contracting.
Yeah.
Fear makes you do that.
And if if you're loving, even if you're in a big hole and you're getting screwed and everything, at least you look at it and you look above and you look for the tunnel and the light and
yeah.
you try to do something about it and you bring the love and the light in there. It's like then the fear is no longer controlling you. You're actually doing something about it. And I found that every what I call fault or all my idiosyncrasies, once I learn enough, it becomes actually strength. They, you know, so as you say, there's a purpose to everything, and if you could just put the light behind it. So I have a simple philosophy regarding fear and love, and also in relationships, including the one with myself, I try to focus on appreciation, introspection, respect. And that's my health blog section. And appreciation is a way of expanding, you know, and realize that there's always something to appreciate. So if you're going to, you know, just go into the darkness, you're doing it. And introspection is realizing that, you know, the only really person you can change is yourself, and maybe be an example for someone else. But, you know, you have to look at yourself, because if you're judging others, you're avoiding something within and you're focusing outwardly. And then respect is whatever you do, really, truly respect. If you just keep that in mind, it's like a reverence. And those three elements together with communication, I believe, are critical to what our world needs, rather than, being controlled by fear and survival. I always think of, when I think of work now and our survival, I think of the essence of it. You know, what's most critical about our survival, and really is an essence of who we are, and rather than how long we last, or it's a certain level of freedom that is really beautiful. And so even though we're we can consider, that's why I think a lot of people won't even look at the dark elements of politics, because they're afraid of being engulfed by it and no longer being awakened to what really is true. But I think having both things allows us to feel compassion, and then we have this collective reality and we have our personal reality. So our collective realities is where, the community, we can find ways that we are stronger than just being pushed by these organized corporate entities that seem to control, a lot of things that we think, do, and say.
Yeah. Well, that's so true. The balance.
Yeah.
It's important. So I wanted to ask if your family is. You mentioned your family. Are they supportive? Do they really know what you're doing, what you're saying, or?
Well, that's another reason why I want to write my memoirs. My dad passed into the spirit world, died December 1st, 2011. And it was, he lived to 89, and he moved up near where I am when he was like 72 and was doing retirement and, actually 62, my daughter was really young then, and I found him a place, and we became like friends, so we would have major battles based on fear and love, I believe. My dad was a Zionist, and he could only believe certain things, and 9/11 and this and that, so we would try to keep certain topics off the discussion list at some points.
Sure.
Usually they come up every so often. But by the end, he actually saw through the whole thing, I believe. He couldn't really express all that, but something changed, and his feelings with me changed, and he kind of like wanted to go in a fast way, and it was time for him, and there was no fear with it, and it was like an optimism about his family. And I think he realized, that I was right about a lot of those things, and he really respected and appreciated me. And his last words was, "I love you." So, all those, that whole transition, becoming friends with my dad, with all that, I went through my whole life, is just very fulfilling.
Yeah. Oh, yes. I mean, and you're very fortunate. A lot of people don't make that kind of peace before their parent dies.
And then, you know, I was totally blown away because, you know, there's a lot of scary things about the unknown. I mean, if you look at it. But it wasn't there, and it showed me, you know, where I'm headed in a way, you know, and so my dad ended up giving me this incredible gift, as well as our continual connection, in on some level. So
yeah,
I had that, and my daughter seems to, you know, appreciate what I'm doing, but just doesn't consider it much, and you know, and she wants to, it just, you know, she hasn't gotten around, and she's slow. I think I'm like that too. I'm very slow, and you know, and but it seems like more and more people are convinced less and less that I'm a crazy person, that
okay,
just psychologically deranged. They're realizing there's something to it because they can see all the signs. And so I am getting more respect and less slack from people, but
it's hard sometimes. And the people that you would think you would get the support from are the hardest. The whole prophet in his own country thing, it seems to be true. Because you discover something, you want to share it with the people closest to you, and they give you this look. It's like, okay, I'll just go over to a stranger and talk. So,
I think it's important to learn not to feel rejected to the point where you don't say the truth, because you know, it's you're giving them that power. So, you know, you have to really believe in yourself to stand up strong for it. But I think you know, what are we here for? Are we here to live in Maya and illusion, or are we here to just be part of something real, and that's the beauty of our talking together tonight and going through all this information. And I'm thankful that I can give something that, you know, could be a useful resource and tool for people that might have not heard much about but want to look further into it. And that's what Fly By News is about.
Yeah, well, people who are open and interested in any of these things, I mean, you know, whether it's JFK, 9/11, Moon, whatever, because this dark legacy, JFK and 9/11, it's amazing. And like you did mention, you have the a short 58 minutes version,
right?
And then you have the longer one,
and it's on YouTube and at the GCTV station, and you can watch it online. Or if anybody wants to donate it to a community TV station, I will send them a hard copy as well if they need one. Because this is meant to be seen.
Right. This is. And I love the fact that in November, the day before the 50-year anniversary of Kennedy being killed, you're going to be showing this in Greenfield.
Right, and I might be making a new version of my compilation, just mostly focusing on JFK and the Federal Reserve.
Okay, for that.
And the Citizens Initiative. We need a solution as well as a problem to make it whole.
That's it. It's a lot of us are aware of the problem, but we do need solutions too. Because if you only tell people all the problems, I mean, that can get really depressing. So I like it when somebody, you know, then has some answers. Jonathan, final words of wisdom. You've been great. Got 2 minutes. What do you think?
I would say, you know, just remember about fear and love, and fear can be very subtle. So we think that we're loving, but we're really avoiding something. So really be honest, keep on looking within, and learn the subtlety of fear and the beauty of love. And I think, you know, then we could work together and make changes in our world, and somehow we're going to get support. I always thought of that when we've seen signs in the skies, there's a calling or there's a time for us to step forwards, like in the spirit of Crazy Horse. And these are our times. And for me, Cassini was that sign in the sky, but everyone will have that moment where something will become real clear. And I just encourage people to go further with those elements of truth and freedom and courage. Are you there? Okay. Yeah, I'm done.
Okay, I'm so sorry. I was lost here, and now I got back, and Jonathan's gone. So you can find more information at www.flybynews.com. And I do want to thank Jonathan Mark for being here tonight. Good night, everyone.